Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuliner. It's that time of year again when students across Columbia sharpen their pencils, pack their book bags, and prepare for the start of another school year. Tomorrow is the first full day of classes for Columbia Public Schools, and it marks the start of a number of changes for the district, such as new school board start times, new school bus routes, and a new comprehensive high school. Today on Intersection, we'll explore some of the changes this year and get a preview of the upcoming school year. Joining me in studio, Christine King is the president of the Columbia Board of Education. Christine, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle Baumstark is the spokesperson for Columbia Public Schools. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And joining us by Skype this afternoon, Susan McClintock is a teacher who's worked for CPS for more than 25 years. This year, she'll be teaching at Alpha Hart Lewis Elementary. She's also the president of the Columbia-Missouri National Education Association. Susan, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
All right. And as always, we'd love to hear from you in our audience as well. For the parents in our audience, what questions do you have about the upcoming school year? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. All right. So to start off for today, I guess maybe Michelle, it might be good to start with you. Today, we actually started with this half day, jump start day, a new thing this year. How has that gone today? What was that, I guess, as well?
You know, I was actually at several of the schools today, just kind of watching what was happening, and a lot of excitement in our buildings. And I know our teachers and our staff at our secondary buildings, because this was for our secondary schools, so our middle schools and our high schools. Our high schools were for 9th and 10th graders. Just to get them familiar with the buildings, meet their teachers, in preparation to have a great formal start tomorrow.
Right. And so this was something, again, new this year. Is that right,
yes,
Christine?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And what was the thought process behind that, especially for this year?
Well, for this year, the thought behind it was we have three of our former junior highs, West Oakland and West
Jefferson.
Oakland Jeff, yeah, they're now middle schools. All those students at those schools are brand new to that school. There's not one student there that has attended that school before. And then with all the new students at the other three middle schools, then not to mention Battle being new, and then at our other two high schools, Rockbridge and Hickman, we have two classes that are brand new to the high school. And so the thought was to ease tensions, make sure the bugs get worked out. You know, we're wireless in the high schools and in all of our schools now. New transportation routes. I mean, all of our bus routes from 6 through 12 all change dramatically. Elementary, not so much. And then the new start times. So we really needed that day to kind of ease into things. And both my children went. I have a freshman at Hickman and then a sixth grader at Smithton. And I haven't talked to the ninth grader yet, but my daughter said it was awesome. You know, I think she was a little apprehensive about knowing where all of her classes were. And so it gives them that chance just to ease into the day.
Sure. Well, yeah, you kind of went over a lot of those changes all just right then. Let's go ahead and pick those apart and go
let's not talk about those anymore.
One by one. No, let's
enough,
go over them just
we?
A little bit yeah. more. Let's start with some of the changes on the grade levels, okay? You mentioned already, but how are these grade levels being reorganized in the district?
Well, when the community agreed back in 05-06 that they wanted a third comprehensive high school and they wanted ninth graders in that high school, that set the plan in motion for this reorganization. And so the change was made that all of our all the junior highs and middle schools from last school year would now become all middle schools serving grades 6 through 8. And then our comprehensive high schools obviously all serve 9 through 12. And prior to that, ninth graders were in the junior highs. All of our grade level populations at all six of those middle schools have gone down dramatically. So, for example, last year at Smithton in 6th and 7th grade, they might have had between, 450, 475 per grade level. Now, at that school, it's about 250. So the 225, 250. So the overall student population at the middle schools have gone down, and then your individual grade level, which makes transition time easier. You get to know your class better. You move that on up into the high school level. We've already seen, 200 more students participate in athletics and activities, more student involvement, engagement. So those are some of the changes at the grade level that occurred, or with the secondary level.
Yeah. And Michelle, I mean, you've already kind of touched on this here, Christine, but Michelle, what were some of the reasons for this reorganization really being necessary at this point?
For a variety of reasons, I think the two biggest ones that our community is aware of is, one, obviously we wanted to have the ninth graders in our high school buildings to ease that transition. The number of transitions our kids were making was difficult, I think, for them. And then we've seen tremendous growth in our school district. So it was necessary to build a third comprehensive high school to ease overcrowding that's going on. It was going on at our other two high schools. If we were going to really be serious about having ninth graders in our high school buildings, there's no physical way that they would be able to fit without building a third high school. So it really was a necessary transition that happened. But it also opened some doors for us to be able to re-examine what that middle level looked like. I think our teachers and our administrative team that have been planning this for several years now have done a great job of trying to meld the best of what we had with our junior high model with the best of what we have with our middle school model. And I think everybody's really excited about what middle school is going to look like this year.
Okay. And I guess, Susan, I'd like to bring you in here as well. We mentioned that you're an elementary school teacher, but what have you been hearing from teachers as your role with NEA and how they feel about some of these changes that are going in place this year?
Well, I think last week there was a lot of trepidation about wondering how it's all going to work and how everybody's going to get where they're going. And the start times kind of became finalized. They came out from HR and everybody kind of took a big breath and thought, now I know what I can do with my own children and my own families and schedule and what's going to be like for the commute and get everybody where they're going. And I think after tomorrow, as always with every year when we start school, the best part is when we get the kids here and we make sure that everything's going well and everybody's going to be safe. And so I think they're all learning about it. The secondary transition, as both Michelle and Christine have said, is something that we've been working together on for a long time, and we've done a great job in planning for win-win situations for our faculty and staff as well as for our CPS students.
Sure. And we've touched on it already, too, but Susan, maybe also about the start time specifically, what's some of the feedback you've had? I know there was a ton of feedback when we were trying to decide these as a community, but what's your feedback now that this is decided, this is how things are going to go? What's the situation with teachers now in that regard?
Well, again, knowing what you're going to do, what time you have to get up, what time you have to be at work and everything was a great relief to see that from our administrators last week. And so we got that information that came out from HR. And mostly, I think tomorrow, seeing how that's going to work, making sure that families know that. I know when we had back to school night here last week, a lot of people were like, whoa, what time do we have to be here? You know, it was still new to our families. And so it was a great opportunity to educate them, to make sure they know that. I know the bus barns worked very hard to get all of the information out to families, and every school has worked really hard during schedule pickup to make sure that they're aware of what time. Mm-hmm. And with small children, the number one thing is you want to make sure there's somebody at home with them, that they realize they're coming home early, too. So that's something that we've been communicating a lot. And, things are new and different, and it's always going to be challenging to have things that change a little bit. But we just have to keep communicating with our families so that everybody knows exactly what the expectations are.
And not to belabor this, Christine, but you both laughed, Christine and Michelle, when I talked about the feedback before. But I guess, how do we feel now that we've made this decision? I know, Christine, when we talked to you before, it's one of those situations where you can't make everyone happy.
Right.
But how do we feel about where we landed on start times?
Well, in my opinion, the decision was made to have the schools place how we did as far as start times. And so now the important thing is we need to make that work. And at the same time, we made that promise as a board and Dr. Belcher is that throughout the year, we would look at, is this working for our students, our community, and how can we offer different solutions or suggestions and whatever. And we've already received some emails, prior to the start of the school year about start times and bus rides. And sometimes when something is brand new, you have to create a new normal. And I think before, people were so used to what we had, even though it really wasn't the most ideal. I mean, we had all six of our middle and junior highs and high school basically starting at the same time. So how do you get all those buses turned around and get people dropped off without transition on buses and all that. Well, we didn't. We did it the best we could, but it really wasn't the most ideal. And so now it's a new normal. By the time you have children and they grow up into the system, it will be a normal potentially to have high school start late and some, you know. So, but we are receiving some feedback from some principals and teachers about what's working, what's not. The true test will be can we get the kids to the school in time that we need to for breakfast and whatnot in the routes that we have planned. Sure. That will be the true test.
Sure. And I've got my cheat sheet here. I'll just go over it. So middle schools are now starting at 7:30, all
Correct.
Middle schools. High schools at 8:55.
Mm-hmm.
And then the elementary schools, it depends on which elementary school you go to.
Right. We have some starting in the early block at 7:40. And then we have made some adjustments with Lee, Benton, and Ridgeway. They start at, 7:55?
There's a range for
yeah.
them, yeah.
They share some buses. And there are small autonomous schools, and they're doing some unique things. And then the bulk of our elementary schools start at 8:20.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so one thing to talk about, too, I guess, we've talked about this before, but mm-hmm. the high schoolers specifically that are mm-hmm. taking part in some of these extracurricular activities, right?
Right?
So mm-hmm. what's the situation for them, and it's obviously going to create some difficulties for some. They're going to be staying later at night than they used to.
Potentially. It's going to be we had challenges before with some students in activities that may or may not have, say, a ride home from an activity. You always had issues with sports like swimming, golf, softball at Hickman, in which kids needed to go off-site for practices or whatever. And now what we're finding is a similar situation, but maybe with a different set of folks. So, for example, the swimmers. Swimmers have early morning practice now rather than after school. Mm-hmm. And as I've said before, their days will be just as long. It just is a different span of the day, right? I mean, their day is not changing any as far as the length. It's when it starts and when it ends. With football, I would assume they'll have all their practices after school. So, yeah, they'll be staying later, but you know, my son this morning got up at 7:20 and was loving life that he did, you know. Now, we do offer a zero-hour class and some online classes at the high school level. Right or wrong, for those kids who are actively involved in athletics or activities such as choir, show choir, marching band, they may not be able to participate in those zero-hour classes depending on their practice times. I think, again, after this year, coaches and activity coordinators will have a much better sense of how to work the schedule and how to make it work. This year is still going to be, I think, a big transition year for us all the way around. That's just my opinion. But so I think we need to ask for a little grace from the community on letting us work through those bugs.
All right. I'll take a moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuliner, and today on Intersection, as school starts this week here in Columbia, we're talking about the significant changes going into place this year in the district. Joining us in studio are Columbia Public Schools spokesperson Michelle Baumstark and Board of Education President Christine King. And Susan McClintock is joining us via Skype. She's a longtime CPS teacher who's also the president of the Columbia, Missouri National Education Association. And for you in our audience, what do you think of the new school start times? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925, or you can email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at @intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 at kbia.org. Real quick, I'll go one more quick question about these school start times before we move on to something mm-hmm. else. Michelle, I guess for these students that are both them at Battle, and also we have the new thing with buses where they're going to be drop-offed at some middle schools and moved around. What are some of the transportation issues that go into these school start times and how these bus routes are affected?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we first started really narrowing down what our start time ranges were going to be last school year, one of the caveats that we kept reiterating was that we would not know the exact time until we could really get the routing completed. So that's for that reason, that's why you see some schools, we have a group of seven that have an earlier start for for elementary school, and then we have some special times for our three, for lack of a better term, our three magnet-type schools, because we did have some routing challenges in order to make the make all of those pieces come together. But I really think that our bus drivers and our transportation department and our folks at First Student have really gone the extra mile this year to try to make sure that tomorrow and even today goes as smoothly as possible. They spent 2 days driving the routes, doing dry runs in the morning and dry runs in the afternoon to make sure that all those drivers are familiar with the routes. We are fully staffed with drivers.
That's a great thing.
That's a great thing. We have, for lack of a better term, a call center set up for that first few days of school when we know that we're going to have a lot of phone calls or people switching routes or questions, and it's not going to be perfect. And I think we all know that anytime you have a change of this magnitude and you're doing something for the first time, and now we're involving parents and students in that process, it's not going to be 100% perfect, but we're sure going to try real hard to make sure everything goes well.
And so how will the transit times compare, I guess? I know it obviously varies student to student where you were going before, especially with all the changes, but on the whole, do we know what kind of difference it'll mean for students on the way to school?
Well, we'll get a full report out, but basically, since all the populations at all the middle schools have drastically changed and their attendance area is, as far as number of students, have gone down, I think we've increased the ability for students to walk or ride their bike to school, you know, because of that. But we also changed the radius in which we provide transportation. Now, K through 8 will be anything greater than a mile, we provide that transportation, whereas before it was K 7, right, I think is what it was. And then 8, 9 on up, it was 2 miles. Is that right? With some of the challenges we have is because of where Battle is located, most of the students that attend Battle need to ride the bus. So their drive times, I'm assuming, based on some of the preliminary stuff I've seen, have been some of the longer ride times. Now, we're hearing from some pockets of individuals that live in some of these areas that are not going to a middle school that is closer to their house but going to another one, and then they're not happy with their ride time. However, their ride time from when the student is picked up to when they are dropped off at school for breakfast is just right around 30 minutes, if not a little less. And that's been the standard all along. It's just new to that family, you know. And so that's, we're going to have to make sure that we temper our opinions and look at the information and the data that we have versus when we get one or two emails of people that are still really upset about probably another topic you're going to want to talk about, the boundary decisions, you know, because really what they're upset about is their boundary, not their drive time, in my opinion.
And Susan, I guess, maybe specifically still talking about the drive times, but Susan, what have you been hearing from parents and teachers? Are the people that are still upset, or is it just anxiety at this point since nothing's happening?
I am not hearing anybody who's been upset. But that's Christine's job to take all the people. So I am just hearing from people that they're just trying to work it out, make sure that they understand it, and that, you know, you get to that they understand what to go through and to communicate it with our families. And so I think even though they've gotten a letter, they've gotten those things, it's just that they understand what it is so that they can plan ahead for it and that they can get everybody where they need to be. I think the jumpstart piece was very exciting for a lot of families, but it was also confusing because a lot of other families thought they started at school today as well, and so they had to. We had to kind of work through that a little bit and explain what was happening. But, you know, it's just part of it, building those relationships, which is what we do the best here in Columbia Public Schools, and that we reach out to the people and that we help work with them. And so you're hearing that from educators, they just want to make sure that their commute is down and that they can get their own families dropped off, kiddos to daycare or their own schools, and that they can also know what time they're leaving. And so they're very excited about having a defined day.
Sure. And then I guess, Susan, moving on to the point that Christine brought up that we wanted to bring up anyway. Don't worry. You didn't take
us
there.
I knew you were going to go there.
but the boundaries, what obviously a lot of changes for a lot of different parents and students throughout the district. What have you heard? I mean, again, there obviously was a lot of feedback throughout this process as well. But how do you feel about where they landed on some of these boundaries?
You do hear some things where people are still like, well, I can see the school from where I live, but, you know, we've worked very, very hard, and there's been some great committee work, and it has been well planned, and incredible compliments to the district and to all of the committee work that people did it, because there was abundant of opportunity for people to have choices, and it is never going to be perfect. When you are moving almost 18,000 children one place or another, from preschool to seniors in high school, and then you throw in our adult ed programs, nothing is going to be exactly perfect, but I think we've done a great job, and I'm really pleased with how it's going to turn out. And mostly what I hear is people are just excited, and one of my favorite things that Chris Belcher says is, you know, education, we do change. And we do change well here in Columbia Public Schools, and we're working hard to make sure that our families are ready to go.
What would you like to add to that, Michelle or Christine?
I think one of the main things we did when it came to this, to the boundary shifts that were taking place, is we really wanted parents to have a good amount of time to adjust to what these changes were going to be. So our committees worked really hard to have those decisions and scenarios, one, be very, very public and open, so that people could weigh in. But then narrowing down those scenarios and presenting something to the board 18 months before any of these changes were going to take place, so that people had time to digest them, to make adjustments, to plan for what their secondary school experience was going to look like, because it would be different. And we knew that that was going to affect a lot of families. We wanted to make sure that they had enough time.
Right. Well, one of the things we might move on to, too, because we got a lot to cover today, as we got to, is Battle High School. Mm-hmm. We brought it up numerous times here, but we actually had this summer session that we kind of got our test run there as well. Mm-hmm. How did that go? What did we learn from this summer session?
Oh, I mean, Dr. Presco, our principal out there, and her staff, in my opinion, since early on, prior to summer school, did an outstanding job getting students excited for Battle. Prior to summer school, they went to Hickman and Rockbridge and talked to all the students who were transferring to Battle. They had numerous parent meetings. I went to one parent meeting at the administration building, and there had to have been 200 parents at this parent meeting, you know, talking about what's what and all that. So they worked tirelessly to get people excited. And then, in my opinion, all you have to do is walk into the building and say, oh, okay, yeah, okay, my kid will go here. That's totally fine. But there's also then, you know, students are leaving their friends, and maybe a student who was really planning to be a Bruin or a QP is now a Spartan. You know, so there's some of that adjustment that went on. So the summer school, I think, really helped ease that tension for those students, because it's kind of like when we send our little kindergartners into summer school the summer before kindergarten. You know, they're scared, they're a little nervous, but they go in and they meet their teacher and they see the hallways and they get adjusted, and we know that works really well. And not to compare kindergartners to high schoolers, but we're all human. If we get a little taste of the change before it actually happens, and they could go in, those students, and start to form the culture of Battle. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really good. And of course they had softball out there. They had a softball league out at Battle, and they had numerous other things going on in the summer, and it drove the community to Battle, which I think is good. More and more people that I talk to actually know where Battle is now, and I'm sure we went through this 40 years ago when Rockbridge was built. You know, if you live north of town, you're like, where's Rockbridge? I don't understand where that is. And now they're starting to get where that is, and it's kind of like with Alpha Heart Lewis. There for a long time, if you tried to explain how to get to Alpha Heart Lewis for someone who was not familiar with that side of town, they just could not picture where it is. You go there once for some CYBA games in the winter, and then now you know where it is. And, you know, so it's a new norm. But they have worked tirelessly. And this Friday we're going to do the battle with all the football teams are going to play a little scrimmage or jamboree, is that what it's called? And so that's, you know, another good thing to bring people out there. So we're and hopefully today any bugs they found in their scheduling and transportation, and they can, you know, we pick up on that prior to tomorrow when all the junior and senior drivers come park at Battle.
I want to take another moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuelner, and today on Intersection, as school starts this week here in Columbia, we're talking about the significant changes going into place this year in the district. Joining us in studio are Columbia Public School spokesperson Michelle Baumstark and Columbia Board of Education President Christine King, and Susan McClintock is joining us via Skype. She's a longtime CPS teacher who's also the president of the Columbia, Missouri National Education Association. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. What do you think of the school restructuring plan? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. One other thing there's been a lot of discussion about through the drawing up the lines, but also specifically at Battle, is the demographics there. Mm-hmm. I think a report I saw said around 50% are going to be on free or reduced school
Correct.
Lunch. What are some of the challenges that come along with that? I don't know. Michelle, maybe we'll start mm-hmm. with you on that one.
I think one of the misconceptions that we have to be careful about is designating a building and letting that define what it is, because it's not just simply not the case. And I think all of our kids can learn at high levels regardless of what their free and reduced lunch status is. That being said, I think the number is really reflective of what we see overall in Columbia. And we tried when we worked really hard to get those boundaries aligned to make sure that what we have for our student populations is reflective of what we see in our community. And I think overall, we know that the free and reduced lunch population here in Columbia has been on the rise. We are 40% overall in Columbia Public Schools. And so I think you see that as reflected in any of our buildings, not just Battle, but all of our buildings.
And I think that we'll see that number change a little bit over time. With Battle, we are opening 9 through 11 only. So the population at Rockbridge and Hickman is still going to be kind of high this year because they'll have 4 grades, but the seniors aren't moving. So I think next year will be maybe even a better indication if you're going to use that as a comparison. But we also know that sometimes when you have a higher free and reduced lunch status, that some of those kids come from backgrounds that they just might need some more resources and some more assistance. And so we know that. We know that at some of the schools, we want to manage those class size a little bit and to provide the resources that those families and teachers may need mm-hmm. to make sure those kids are in those high-level classes and doing what they need to be doing. And we have fabulous teachers and administrators in place at those buildings who are used to working with people who come from poverty. We also have to be careful that in our community, we have also a lot of people that qualify and sign up for the free and reduced lunch program, but they are visiting professors and those types of individuals that they still need the assistance, but they're not poor. And I think that percentage, that got brought up to me loud and clear throughout this process. And so like what Michelle said, to define it, there's more to the story than just a child that mm-hmm. qualifies for free and reduced lunch.
Sure. But if I'm not mistaken, that
right.
was part
it was.
Of the, it was part of the process we
it
were drawing
is.
Things.
It
how did that
was.
And how did that end up? Where are we drawing students from into Battle, and how did we rearrange a little bit to try to get the demographics settled, or as far as where we're drawing from?
No, you know, we didn't say, oh, let's pull this pocket and see what happens. We really looked at the scenario. Well, and they looked at what thousands of scenarios. Mm-hmm. Every time they did a scenario, they pulled up the numbers, but. When I talked to the people that were on the committee, no one ever said, well, let's try to pull 5% from this school to this school. They did want to balance it. So it probably sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. And I'm not. It's just I think there's a perception that we can just go and say we're going to pull this pocket of people because they do or don't qualify and move them. That's not really – we really looked at the population of the schools in terms of the numbers. And then also we ran the numbers to see the balancing of it. We also, I remember having the conversation with the higher numbers at Lang, Oakland, and Battle that, well, does it make sense to keep those schools potentially a little lighter on population? And I don't know if you want to add more to that.
Well, we'll have to take a quick break. We can get to that when we come back. But this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today on Intersection, as school starts this week here in Columbia, we're talking about significant changes going into place this year in the district. Joining us in studio are Columbia Public School spokesperson Michelle Baumstark, Christine King, and Susan McClintock are joining us via Skype. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuliner, and today on Intersection, as school starts this week here in Columbia, we're talking about the significant changes going into place this year in the district. Joining us in studio are Columbia Public Schools spokesperson Michelle Baumstark and Columbia Board of Education President Christine King. And Susan McClintock is joining us via Skype. She's a longtime CPS teacher who's also the president of the Columbia, Missouri National Education Association. We'd love to hear from you and our audience today. What concerns do you have about the changes in the Columbia Public School District this year? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia, or you could join our online chat. And Michelle, if we can finish that thought, we had to cut off right in the middle before we went to the break. We were talking about the demographics and what kind of role that play when drawing up the boundaries.
Absolutely. The demographics is really just one of probably 30 factors that were considered as we went through developing all the different boundary scenarios, looking at everything from what would make natural boundaries, neighborhoods, looking at ages of kids, how many kids would be coming through 5 years from now, 10 years from now, to be able to project out what that would do should you move one neighborhood into a boundary area versus another. I really think it was a very comprehensive process getting down to where individual children were residing so that they could try to make the best decisions possible. Just like in anything, and Susan said it and Christine has said it, that we're not perfect. It's never going to be perfect, but we're certainly trying to do our best and to make the best decisions that we can for all of our kids.
Okay. And moving on to something else now. Thanks for finishing that for us. But there's more to talk about, but we'll move on. We were talking about Battle High School. Continuing on that, there's a new program there that's similar to one that already existed at Rockbridge with the preschool there. Michelle, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that program that's happening this year.
About the preschool program?
Yes.
We have a really great preschool program in general in Columbia Public Schools. It's funded through Title I Preschool, which is a federal entitlement grant that allows us to be able to have preschool classrooms, encourage more students to be able to be involved in a high-quality preschool program. We have a number of special preschools that we're offering in several of our high school buildings even, where we involve students in that process through some of their career technical courses that they can take related to childcare. We have a early childhood preschool facility. We took Field Elementary School, what many may remember was an elementary school, and converted that to be preschool classrooms as well as housing our gifted center. So that was a great way to repurpose a building as we moved kids into Alpha Heart. So I think we're pretty proud of the opportunities that we're able to offer when it comes to preschool and being able to offer quality preschool programs.
Sure. And Susan, maybe get your thoughts on that too. Specifically, I guess the classroom there sounds pretty unique. Mm-hmm. You've got actually like a mirror where the students can see into the other classroom, the preschool classroom.
I think one of the great things it'll do is it shows our students how much we value education and how they could be part of it and would actually tap whether we have future educators in our schools and looking at it, and what an amazing professional choice for them to get to make. And as Michelle said, our Title I programs are incredible, and if you are ever questioning what should go on there, you can get a chance to look at it yourself. The Title I programs that we do with our preschoolers are phenomenal. We're doing a good job of tracking our data, but when having been an elementary teacher for most of my career, when you see kiddos who come from the preschool programs that we do with 3 and 4 year olds and then they enter into our elementary program, we see them just really soar. And so we know that they know what school's about, their families have been involved, and it's helped them all to be great Columbia Public School students. And so the program that they have allows a lot of opportunity for observation, but it also allows a great safe environment for those kids and yet another place for Columbia Public School families to bring their children for preschool.
One other thing we wanted to talk about again on the idea of changes this year. Who knows what I'm going to throw at
really.
You? No. This school resource officers. There is a bit of a shift this year. Mm-hmm. Mainly middle schoolers, I guess, will notice the change.
Right. Yeah. And we will have 4 resource officers, but none of the resource officers will be at the middle school level. So they'll be in the high schools, and then we have one at CORE. And then we use an off-duty police officer at Douglas, which that has been the case. And then we have our 2 safety and security directors that peruse around and all that. Certainly, if something happens at a middle school building, we, you know, get a hold of, you know, either our security director or the police, and they come. I mean, if that happens. But we won't have that same presence. We believe that Columbia PD will still have a substation at Jeff Junior High this year. That went over very well last year. That got put into place, I think it was mid-year. Is that when that happened about? And really, that's just a place where the police officer can come and do his paperwork. But having that police officer presence is vital. There's that, do you need it at the middle school level? Do you not? I think we would be very open to have the police substations at all the middle schools. I mean, it's a great community building thing if that's something that CPD could do. But as of right now, we won't have any more SROs than the four that we have, and then the off-duty at Douglas.
Right. And so before that, again, the number of officers hasn't changed. It's just the fact that we have a new high school.
Well, and it has over time, right, sure. But it hasn't from last year to this year.
Right.
You know, when I first got on the board in 2009 or going into that year, I think there was 9 SROs, and they rotated between. They were at the high schools, the two high schools, and then they rotated at the middle and junior high level. But those officers also taught the DARE program at the fifth grade level. So, you know, when you take into consideration all their duties, and then we did away with the DARE program. We reduced the number of SROs, which was a joint issue between us and CBD because of cost. Probably what they're focusing more on what they need to be focusing on. That the DARE program did take up, you know, a fair amount of their time educating all the fifth grade classes in the district. So that's where we're at this year. And you know, hopefully, I would like to see more SROs in our schools, but that's a big budget issue for both sides of the equation, not just us or Columbia Police Department.
Sure. And so one of the questions, because we've got all these students coming to new schools,
sure,
too. What are some of the school safety plans, I guess, at schools as far as you have to be buzzed in? Are there any changes in that this year? What are the distinctions for, especially since we have so many parents with students at new schools this
year?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes. You know, one of our goals this past year when we talked about safety and security changes, and we evaluate those every year to talk about what our safety and security plans are, where we have needs, and one of the goals that we had set for ourselves was that we would have the buzz-in system installed in all of our school buildings. And we are in a really good position to start out this school year. We did accomplish everything we had set out to do. We have buzz-in systems in all of our elementary schools. We have them at almost all of our secondary buildings, with the exception of Hickman and Rockbridge high schools. You know, there's some traffic flow issues with kids going in and out of various doors, and you've got the Career Center adjacent to Rockbridge and kids needing to go in and out for class. So those larger buildings do present some challenges as far as retrofitting those. West will have their buzz-in system installed later on this year. We're abutting against the air conditioning project that has been going on there.
And that was probably a little more important to get that
done. Yeah, we had to prioritize, you know, getting the air conditioning done, and that, of course, presents some challenges when you're installing air conditioning in an older building over a 16-week period, just trying to get that done during the summer. So we're really proud that we've accomplished that. As much as we did over the summer. So we're really excited about that new buzz-in system, and I know that it will make our families and our students and our staff feel safer in our buildings, which is what we always want. We want people to feel safe when they come to school. Some of the other changes, of course, is going through and evaluating our lighting, our security camera placement, making sure that all of those are up and operational. We replaced all of our two-way radios. That was a huge undertaking to be able to do that, but that will certainly keep lines of communication open during a crisis situation, being able to respond to each other quickly in a timely manner and take care of any issues that may arise. We have approximately 700 security cameras in Columbia Public Schools with live monitoring for those available. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to try to make sure that our buildings are safe.
Sure. And I guess, Susan, have you heard much from teachers or parents on this and how they feel about the current safety procedures in the area and any changes in the last couple of years?
Well, most of them haven't experienced the buzz-in system yet, so I'm sure that they will be looking to that. But from the employee standpoint, that has been a big concern of theirs about how to be safe, because it's our job to make sure that we're keeping all of these kids safe. And so that's been something that's been very important to our employees, CMNEA members have told me over and over again about safety and security and how to manage that, and that they want to have as much input, and they are very pleased to see that we are moving forward to try to do things. And it's a great way to do it in a preventative mode instead of reactive, because it gives us a chance to look at all of those things and go through and make sure. But it is a high priority for teachers in the classroom and how to go through. We always have safety and security plans, but you know, just to take one more step to make sure we go through and plan for fire and storms and all of those things, but to do this next step to make sure who is coming in and out of our buildings. And then you want to make everybody feel welcome, so that's another piece of it, but yet you have to turn around and make sure that, that what you're doing is all safe, because we're responsible for all of these people who are here.
And I will add, you know, when we built Alpha Heart and our two newest elementary schools that will be built here in the next couple years, the plan is that you build a school with security in mind. So at Alpha Heart, when you walk in, if you're a stranger to the building and you don't know where you go, you have to go to the office. You go into some of these older buildings, and even you go in, and if you're not familiar with the building, you walk in and you're like, where's the office? And it's very easy to get turned around. And the other thing that I think that we have done a good job, because I saw it, my daughter was a fifth grader at PAX and Keeley last year, and they did put in the buzzer system midway through the year last year. They also talked to office staff about, you know, it's great that the office looks real pretty with plants and everything, but you want a clear vision from your office, wherever you sit as a support person, out to the building. And I noticed that at many of the buildings that, you know, where they used to have, you know, big stuff up, all cleared off, and that's also a cultural change for some of these employees to get rid of their things that they've had for a long time, that helps make their area neat or you know, feel like home or whatever the case may be. So
yeah. One of the things we were actually able to do before the start of this school year, thanks to Carl Edwards, who is a NASCAR driver who happens to live here in Columbia, was he was funded for us to be able to have safety awareness training. And that's one of those things that we talk about being aware of your environment and making that opportunity available to all of our employees to attend that, to become more culturally aware of what their surroundings are, to be able to recognize situations that make you uncomfortable and how to react to those types of things. So it's something, obviously, that we are very cognizant of and want to make sure that all of our employees have the opportunity to experience some of those trainings.
Okay. Let's move on now to another topic that's been a hot button issue for a couple of years now and will continue to be, and that is Common Core standards. So where is Columbia in that process right now?
Well, and Susan would probably be able to talk to it a little bit more than what I can, but I know last year we started the implementation of Common Core standards across the district at the 6 through 12 level, I believe. Was it K? Susan, I don't know. I can't remember if it was K-12 or I know 6-12 because I heard about it at the secondary level.
It is K-12. And what's most important to understand is that the state of Missouri, through the Department of Elementary and Secondary Ed, adopted it first. And what the biggest confusion for people is that they think that it is curriculum. Right. And then they also think that materials are curriculum. So we have to be really careful when we talk to people about it so that they understand. So Common Core is a set of standards that range for all of our students to reach to. And then the curriculum is still designed by our local and by our state so that we have those state guidelines. Then when you bring materials in, a lot of people will say, oh, there's your curriculum. No, those materials are there just to supplement our curriculum. And the Common Core is there so that when we are comparing and having people love to rank schools, to rank states, to base it on your assessment, to do all those things. They want everybody to have a grade or a number so that they have something that they can look at. And the idea with the Common Core is that they'll be able to do that nationwide, and you'll be able to say, State A has this, State B has that. They have the exact same things, and we're comparing them so that we're not comparing apples and bicycles instead of just apples and oranges. So when we look at things and we'll be able to do that, then we'll have a better idea of where public education is, and it's not nearly as abysmal as people like to pretend that it is. We really have some fantastic things that are happening in public ed, and we're hoping the Common Core will allow, plus there's some great standards that are going to set our kids up for fantastic things. So locally, we've been working on this for all last year, and we've had some intensive things already this year that we're looking at it. Our writing program is going to be completely tied to this. we are trying to get well ahead of the changes. And like I said earlier, everything changes in education. We like to pretend that we're still doing it the same way we did when we were kids, but really that's not true at all. And there isn't anything that I'm doing this year that I did 27 years ago when I started teaching. So everything is completely different all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're moving ahead. We're looking at that. And the Common Core are standards of places to go for, and then our curriculum will support those things, and our materials will support the curriculum and the standards.
Right. So even though that curriculum's not mandated, as you're saying, it's still something, though, that it, most likely Columbia school teachers are going to be adjusting, and parents and students will notice, I mean, adjustments to get to those standards, correct?
For the standards, yes. Mm-hmm. Everybody will be reaching towards those. It's the best way that I've tried to explain it to people is to think of it more as a goal. These are the goals that you're going to reach, and your curriculum is more of your objective on how you're going to get from here to there, and your materials are just the ladder to be able to do that.
Sure. And Christine?
Well, no, what I was just going to say is that I know at the middle school and junior high level last year, I got a lot of emails from people that I didn't know, and then just my friends who told me about the level of writing, reading, and homework. Now, some people didn't necessarily experience more, but just talked about, especially like at the sixth grade level, because I know when my child went through sixth grade, he really didn't have a lot of homework. And I know homework isn't necessarily the benchmark of how much you're doing, but you know, there is that level of when they bring home a lot of homework, you can kind of see what they're doing. And I know that last year, the goal was they wanted to make sure and have as many of these kids hit these standards that were, you know, more robust, a little bit. And like Susan said, we're trying to get kind of beat the curve. And I think the writing and the reading part is fabulous. I talked to an elementary teacher who was talking about the change in the writing program that they were working on this summer. And you know, we kind of tend to focus on reading, but if a child doesn't know how to write or express their thoughts and ideas, and so most of the Common Core standards, there's a little bit more of an emphasis on the nonfiction reading, you know, so Johnny can't always go and pick that fun little fiction book that he always picked to read. I think that's pretty amazing. But, you know, what I told parents is that if the homework is too much and it's straining the family, I mean, if a kid is spending 3 and 4 hours in sixth and seventh grade on homework, that's a conversation you need to have with either the school principal or the teachers to find out what really does the student need to do. You know, because we don't want a sixth grader to have 4 hours of homework every night. But I think our school communities felt it, and I know that our teachers felt it last year. I know that the school that my son went to at West, when we went to the back-to-school night, every teacher, and I was so pleased to hear this, every teacher talked about the importance of these Common Core standards and attempted to prep parents. Now, it was so hot in the building because we didn't have air. Most of the parents had a glazed over look. But, you know, I think parents now this year are starting, it's starting to sink in that these Common Core standards are richer, they're more robust, we're focusing a lot on the nonfiction reading, more writing, integrating the writing into everything. So hopefully everyone will start to understand what we're doing a little bit better than maybe what happened last year.
Sure. And Susan, I guess I'd like to get a feeling from you too on how teachers feel about these. Are they excited about these changes? I mean, the phrase teaching to a test is definitely thrown around like a four-letter word among educators. How do these standards change, I guess, the way people feel about what these standards are and what the goals are of education in the state?
I think that people are still learning. So as the word I've used a couple times, you know, there's still trepidation about what's going to happen and how they're feeling about it. And so they're looking at how they're going to weave this in, how they're going to make sure that they master it. And as we move from one set of assessments to another, it's always a big learning curve. What's great is that we have done that more in parts this time as we are making these transitions, because change is inevitable in education always. And so we're doing it in slower increments and allowing people to weave that in and make sure that we do it. They are high standards. They are really pushing kids to be more literate. As Christine said, you know, writing, we who have worked in literacy balanced classrooms have always done writing in every aspect. And so it's really exciting to see how that's going to be valued and how that's going to be pushed through. And then it just takes our kids to support them, because we know that even though there are places for kids to work in the vocational areas and everything, they're still going to have to be communicators verbally and written to be able to be successful in the world where they're going to graduate into. So whether they choose the vocational route or they choose to go to college, they are going to have those type of skills. And so this standard sets it even higher and allows it to just keep pushing that in and at every grade level, and so that you continue to pull it through. So from kindergarten through 12th grade, we'll be looking at all of those standards, helping and pushing. The same thing in math. You know, in a literacy balanced classroom where I've taught for years and years, you always did writing and convinced people and looked at your opinion and did that. And now we'll be able to assess that and show how kids can use those learnings. So.
Okay. We'll take a moment to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today on Intersection, as school starts this week here in Columbia, we're talking about the significant changes going into place this year in the district. Joining us in studio are Columbia Public Schools spokesperson Michelle Baumstark and Columbia Board of Education President Christine King, and Susan McClintock is joining us via Skype. She's a longtime CPS teacher who's also the president of the Columbia, Missouri National Education Association. We'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. Is your child going to attend Battle High School this year? What do you want to know about the school and how it fits into the district's plans? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925, or you can email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So now we should move on to something we don't know a whole lot about just yet, but that is House Bill 253. Mm-hmm. It's a bill that was passed by the legislature. Governor Nixon vetoed it. Would change the way taxes are collected in the state pretty significantly if the Republican legislature decided to override that veto. That's something they could do next month if they chose to do so.
Right.
So there's been some estimates, on how that might impact Columbia.
Yeah, and I don't remember the exact – I didn't bring the information that Dr. Belcher has sent us on those exact numbers.
Right. Range is somewhere between 4 and 7 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a significant amount.
But we haven't received full funding for years.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is a trick question. You're asking a trick question.
but still, obviously, this is something that you're going to keep a close eye on,
sure,
and probably have an opinion on, I would guess.
Yeah. Yes. What our board is going to plan on doing is on the 22nd, at our work session, we're going to talk about this. And then in September, at our September board meeting, we'll make the decision on how as a board – do we want to have a resolution that expresses our opinion as a board? This board, and I agree with this philosophy, we need to be really careful, even though I know this greatly impacts us. We are supposed to be the most non-political party in the group, in the state, in terms of we're here to help education and the education of kids and more school boards, and in particular us because of where we're located and the size of our district and all that. We do get asked to support different political sides of whatever the issue is. And, our board is made up of Republicans, Democrats, mixes, it doesn't matter. There comes a point in time when how do we state what we believe in without becoming a political figure? And so I think when we talk about it on Thursday, we've got some ideas that we'll talk about. We don't know for sure what will happen if actually it will go to the override session or whatever it's called.
The veto session.
Happens
every year in September, but this year might actually matter.
But
yeah.
We don't know. Right.
Yeah.
We don't know if that will actually happen. And I say that about we haven't received full funding because I think that sometimes what happens is when there's something big in the news, we focus on, this one issue is greatly going to impact us. And it is, except for the fact every year that I've been on the board, our funding has been less and less at the state level. I mean, it just has. Now, I understand why some of those things happen. So, the real issue for me is when is the state, and every other state goes through this as well, when is the state going to get to a point financially where when they tell you this is how much money they're going to give you, they give it to you. That's my big concern because the issue is even bigger than this, because, what happens if this all goes through and they say, well, you're going to get 7 million less and then we get 8 million less,
Mm-hmm.
So that I have a bigger picture than that, but yet I don't know what's really going to. But we are going to talk about it on Thursday. We have a 7:30 a.m. meeting. If anybody wants to come out, it's a public meeting. It's our tax hearing, and then
that's what we'll know if the board decides to take.
We may not make the decision then. I think we're just going to talk about it and make sure everybody's up to speed. And then I think at our September meeting is when we will make the September 9th regular Board of Education meeting. We'll make the decision if we move a resolution forward.
And then, I guess, Susan, I don't know, does Missouri NEA have any stance on this yet?
Yes, we strongly do support the governor's veto and have encouraged everyone, all of our members across the state, our 36,000 plus members across the state, to contact all of their senators and representatives to encourage them to support the veto and not to overturn it. And I agree with Christine that our funding and our formula is an issue, but if House Bill 53 goes through, we're not only going to be looking at schools, we're going to be looking at our mental health support, we're going to be looking at all of the funding that we do that will affect our kids, our roads, everything will be cut. This will be our race against Kansas to the bottom. And so it's really an unfortunate event, and we're really hoping that people will seriously look at this and make some amazing movement in not supporting this bill and continuing with the veto. So yeah, we have come across it, and we will encourage our school board to make that resolution to support the veto and to overturn House Bill 253 and to move forward. And so, right, Christine is exactly right that we have not received our funding, but if this bill goes through the way it is, it will probably be cut again, and so will many of the other supports for our students.
Yeah. Is there any concern, too, I guess, on the teacher's side of how it may affect compensation, too?
We could certainly have, across the state, have looked at the problem that we could have teachers who could be cut. If you lose that kind of money, you know, our school district would have to make those. Every local school district would have to make their own decisions, but it would come out to where would we be laying people off? Would we be firing people? What would we be doing? You know, so it would be all kinds of different things if, depending on if you have that kind of hit to your local budget, you're going to have really, really big decisions to make, and what that will trickle out into our community would be amazing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that people may not realize is that when you talk about school districts in general, and especially in Columbia, roughly 80% of our budget is people. I mean, that's what makes up the educational system. It's the teachers and the staff in our buildings. So when you talk about having a large reduction somewhere in the several million-dollar range, where's that going to come from? It's people. And so that's definitely concerning.
Yeah, we only have about 30 seconds left, but a very big question and a short answer. How have we dealt with that in the past? How has Columbia gotten through continuing having cuts? What's the solution here, and how might we deal with that?
We've done a lot of different things.
They've done a lot of different things. And since I've been on the board, I mean, Dr. Belcher has worked diligently with his staff to make sure that each individual department is doing what they can, so when it comes up to the board level, we can see that the changes and differences. We've operated the salary schedule each year I've been on the board, except the first year that was a decision made prior to me getting on the board. We are committed to doing that. And if this does go through and you have to either lay people off or freeze salary schedules or do anything like that, that impacts your local economy. Because now you have people out of jobs.
We cut 253 positions, and we've barely begun to re-bring those people in. We froze salaries for 2 years. We've had to, at different times, extended our transportation window so that it was further out for where kids were picked up. I mean, everything that we could possibly do, we have done. And so we're just now kind of getting back to barely level. We still don't have all those positions. We only had to release a few people where most of them were through attrition, but we've done a lot of different things to try to make it work.
Okay.
And that is with the funding that we have.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much for watching today's Intersection. Thanks to our guests, Columbia Public Schools spokesperson Michelle Baumstark, Columbia Board of Education President Christine, and Susan McClintock, who joined us via Skype. She's a longtime CPS teacher who's also the president of the Columbia Missouri National Education Association. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. Thanks for listening today.